From a dot in the middle of the map, this is Midwesternish. I'm Gina Kaufman. This podcast is all about telling stories from the Midwest. And for this episode, we're sharing some good ones we recorded a few months ago at a live storytelling event I hosted in Kansas City. The theme was Up All Night. Late nights in the Midwest can have sights and sounds all their own, like this. Those are bullfrogs who come out and make noise late at night in the summertime. That's the best time to harvest them for delicacies like frog legs. But late night Midwest style can also sound like this.
Can I get a half pound cheeseburger?
That's an all-night diner in Kansas City, Town Topic. There's just one small counter with a few bar stools perched right across from the grill. And when the bars downtown close, this diner is packed. A 24-hour diner was my personal introduction to the magical other realm that exists, if you go out in the wee hours. When I was little, I had trouble sleeping at my dad's house, and that's for no other reason than it just wasn't my mom's house. So I'd stay in bed, just waiting impatiently for light to start coming in through my window. I dreaded nighttime pretty much all day long. It was so long and boring and lonely. But after a while, I started noticing something. At around midnight, every night, my dad would get up and go downstairs to the kitchen. The refrigerator door would open and close, and sometimes he'd stay there for like an hour. It didn't occur to me to join him for a really long time. I guess I thought if I went downstairs, I would get in trouble. But when I finally worked up the nerve, there he was at the kitchen table. For a visual, picture Bernie Sanders wearing doctor's scrubs. His hair was totally disheveled, and he was sitting with some kind of snack. I don't know what he was eating that night, but his midnight snacks were disgusting. He ate frozen melon balls that hadn't been thawed or bologna straight out of the package. I tried to act nonchalant, so I just pulled up a chair like it was no big deal. And he was like, "What's the matter? Can't sleep?" That's it. No one was mad. He told me to make myself a snack. And this became a little ritual. Suddenly, I looked forward to nighttime, which went in an instant from being dark and cold and boring to being a magical time when I sat quietly with my dad eating bizarre snacks. And so eventually, when I got older, we went out one night for our midnight snack to an all-night diner. And it blew my mind. The people watching was incredible. And I just remember sitting there thinking, who are all these people? And what are they doing out right now? So let's find out. One of those late-night people is the barista. Our first story is Ruby Hansen and the Magic Brownie.
This story takes place on a Thursday night, and Thursday nights were when I would work solo, so the place was mine. And this one night, nobody came in. I had been there for a couple of hours. I had everything prepped and cooked. All the dishes were done. The place was clean. And in walked two jazz musicians. And I was so happy to see them, and then they offered me a pot brownie. Now, I've had pot brownies before, and they had never worked on me. I don't know if it's I have, like, some magic pot brownie shield, or my friends were too high to remember to put the pot in the brownies while they were making them, but they never worked on me. So when they offered me a pot brownie, I was, like, not thinking about the pot so much as I was, like, I want to eat a brownie right now. Like, I'm hungry. So I ate the brownie, and I took their order, and I made their food. They sat down, they ate, they left, I did the dishes, and then I was alone again with this pot brownie, like, sneaking up on me. And so I decided to make burritos. So I pull out all the ingredients from the refrigerator, get the tortillas out, I'm stacking the burritos, and I look down, and I'm like, there's way too much shit in this burrito. It'll never fold. So I scoop half of it out. And then I look down and I'm like, no one's gonna buy this burrito. It's way too small. So I start filling it back up. And that's when I realize that I'm brownie high. I'm just going back and forth. So I reassess the situation. It takes me 45 minutes to make like 15 burritos, but I do it. I got them in the fridge. I'm high-fiving myself. Check one for me. I'm gonna show this brownie who's boss. And then people walk in. And I'm like, uh-oh. Not only have I forgotten how to make burritos, I've forgotten how to speak. I don't know how to talk anymore. But thank God these people were regulars. So they knew what we were serving. I didn't have to tell them what we had. They were asking me the questions. So I go over and I'm making the food and I'm like, check another one for me. This brownie is going down. I can totally handle this situation. I'm making their food and I'm bopping around to the music because I'm so high, you guys. I am so high. I haven't spoken in like over an hour. So I'm making their food and I'm realize that the music is way too loud. So I go over and I turn it down and I start making their food again and I'm like, oh my God, they can hear my thoughts. I turned down the music too low. So I go and I turn the music back up and I'm making their food and I play it and I take it out to them and I'm like, oh my God, the music is way too loud. And I do this the entire time they're there. I'm like, too loud, too low, too loud. Check one for the brownie. I give that one to the brownie, I just deal with it. So they leave, and there I am again. I do their dishes, and then I'm like, I am totally alone. It's in the middle of the night, and I'm so high. For those of you that have never been to YJ's, it's pretty wild. I mean, the decor itself is pretty wild. It's totally random. There's paintings and newspaper cutouts, and pictures on the walls. There's tons of hanging from the ceilings, beads, shoes, umbrellas, art everywhere. It is totally random. And at that moment, I decided that I was going to destroy that. I had nothing else to do. So I started with the plates. Which, there was like metal plates, plastic plates, porcelain plates. They're all different sizes. I take them all out, and I start stacking that shit, largest to smallest. And then I go to the bowls, and I do the bowls. And then I go to the coffee mugs, all of them upside down with the handles facing left. It looked like a Rockettes line. I mean, they're all like... It was beautiful. It was beautiful. But I didn't stop there. I went to the vegetables, and I arranged all the vegetables by shape. And then there's like 30 different types of condiments and hot sauce. And YJ's is small. There's 4 tables and a piano, and 30 bottles of condiments on the piano. And I made a choir out of them. The tall ones were in the back. They slowly went down to the shorties in the front. And then I made my way to the fruit. Roy G. Biv, all the way down. And just as I was making the bananas spoon themselves, which I thought was genius. I was like, well, of course they should be spooning themselves. My coworker comes in to relieve me of my shift. Thank God. So I leave it like that, and I felt so proud of my work, and I went home, and I'm still really high, and I put on a record, and I laid on the floor. Have you guys ever done that, where you're just like, oh, yeah? And I was like, check one for me, and I beat that brownie.
You know who else is up all night? All the ladies having babies. This next story comes from Ashley Walburn. She's a doula, which means she gives other new moms support through pregnancy and childbirth, so she stays up all night a lot. But this story is about her first time staying up all night for a birth, the night her own son was born.
So I'll set the stage.
I am 21 years old, unmarried, in Emporia, Kansas, halfway through college. And I'm 11 days past my due date, which at the time, I didn't know that babies came 11 days past their due date. I remember my OBGYN, who also happened to be my dad's best friend. It's a small town. And he called me Ashy. I need to check your cervix, Ashy. It was awful. And when I was 37 weeks pregnant, which was 5 weeks before I ended up giving birth, he said, you could go anytime. And I thought that meant I was going to have a baby that day. And then 5 weeks later, I went into labor. So I go into labor on a Friday night. 10 days past my due date is when I went into labor. And I was up all night that night in labor. So I labored all day, and I finally gave birth at 8:22 p.m. on March 19th, 1994. Thank you. Everybody does deserve a round of applause after that. Thank you. So my baby Jake was born, and you spend the next day at the hospital, and all I remember is an older woman with a short perm, teaching me how to breastfeed. And she came in for like 15 minutes, and like that was all I needed to know about sustaining a human being's life. And I'm getting wheeled down to my car. And the person pushing me, I thought she knew everything. So she's taking me down. I've got my cute new baby in my arms. And I remember saying to her, so I'm going to take him. And she said, yeah, I think so. And I said, so you guys are just going to let me go with him? And she said, yeah, I think you guys are all ready. Like, you know, I'm wheeling you downstairs. And at that time, I'm 21. And I think, like, this just couldn't be a good idea. I don't know anything about babies. And you know when you get a new puppy and it seems like such a good idea and they're so cute, and then you get home and you're like, what have I done? And you have just like he's still cute, it's still like a super cute puppy, but you've got a little bit of buyer's remorse. So in that moment, I told Jake, my oldest was born in 1994, he's almost 23, I told him this story today, and I felt so bad about the buyer's remorse part. So we get home, and I'm finally, I mean, I went through 42 weeks of pregnancy, a long childbirth, and I'm really just settling into, okay, it's just me and him, like, nobody's coming for me. And when I say nobody's coming, I'm saying nobody came. My mom didn't spend the night. We lived in the same town. Her 21-year-old daughter, who knew nothing about babies, she just was like, all right, see you tomorrow. And my boyfriend also wasn't there. And so I'm home just with this baby who was up all night. He was up all night. And he was nursing and nursing and nursing, and my poor breasts were killing me, and nobody told me that was gonna happen. And it's about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm sitting backwards in my bed. And I don't know how I ended up backwards in the bed, but I was sitting backwards, looking at where the pillows should have been. And I'm changing baby Jake's diaper. Something I also didn't know was sometimes newborn babies, when they poop, it shoots out. And if you don't know that, you should know that. Now, that's why I'm here tonight, so you guys all know that. So he changes his little diaper, and he shoots out poop, and it gets in my hair and on my face, and it also got inside my mouth. And so I get it out of my mouth. And I realized in that moment that I wasn't even mad. And I looked down at that little baby and I thought, I'm gonna be okay. I got this.
Our last story comes from Jessica Farmer, and it's a little different. Big life events tend to break us out of our routine and keep us awake when we're normally asleep. But it's not always because something amazing is happening, like the birth of a new human. Sometimes we're up all night because we're going through something really rough.
When my brother turned 16, I took him to a heavy metal show. That's how good of a sister I am. I took him to go see his favorite art rock slash electro industrial slash heavy metal band, Mushroomhead. I don't know if you're familiar, but they have these like grotesque Halloween masks that they wear with X's over their eyes. Yeah, it's pretty great. That's how good of a sister I am. So I drove my brother 30 minutes to Lawrence. He didn't have his license yet. And we get to the venue. And I stand in the back of the venue while he goes up front to mosh with the crowd. I'm back there with the three other women in the crowd. One mom, one girlfriend, and another girl who I realized shortly after is also a big fan when she goes up to the stage and then dives into the crowd. My brother at this time was at the height of his goth phase, so green hair, black painted nails, homemade duct tape wallet, the whole deal. Music always united my brother and I. We had slightly different tastes. I was more Alanis Morissette to his Kurt Cobain, but we always found common ground there. My brother James was a big Radiohead fan. We grew up in a small town, and like so many other angsty youth before us, we found comfort in our headphones. So James was also a musician, and you could hear the influence Radiohead had in his work. So one summer, I'm home, and I'm talking about how we're discussing this, the latest Radiohead album that came out, because we're cool like that. And he mentions that the whole reason that he likes Radiohead is because I made a comment when I was 14 that I really liked The Bends, one of their albums, and that's the reason he started listening to them. I have no memory of saying that. So you never know how the things you say will affect people. My brother died unexpectedly last April. The week after was a whirlwind for my family and I. We had a memorial service, followed a few days later by a small family service at my mom's church, where we put his ashes in the columbarium. My mom asked me if I wanted some of the ashes, and I said yes, because I couldn't imagine my rebel little brother stuck in a church for eternity. I took the ashes in a cedar box after the funeral director handed it to me, and I put them in the passenger seat of my car. It was so weird. I felt like I should put a seatbelt on them or something. I drove to my mom's house afterwards to eat pizza and cry. And then I took a 6-hour nap. I woke up in the middle of the night. I decided I wanted to go home and sleep in my own bed. So I drove from my mom's house in Overland Park to my house in Midtown. I don't know if you're familiar, but there's a famous speed trap right by Einstein Brothers Bagels on Shawnee Mission Parkway. And I was driving that stretch of road just so excited to sleep. And my mind was somewhere else. I wasn't thinking about that at all. Until I saw red and blue flashing lights in my rearview mirror. I pulled over, and in that moment, I realized two things. One, I had a headlight out that I'd been meaning to fix, but hadn't. And two, this was my brother's car, and the registration was still in his name. In the moments when the officer started walking up to my window, it was like my brain was slowing down. I rolled down my window, and before I knew what was happening, I was handing the officer my license and registration and saying, "This is my brother's car, and actually, he just died, and actually, these are his ashes right here in the box next to me." And as I said this, the officer's eyes got bigger and bigger. He just took my license and he ran back to his car. He didn't even take my registration. And in that moment, I laughed because this situation was so ridiculous and because I felt a little bit like I was using everything to get out of a ticket, but mostly because I knew my brother would think this was hilarious. The officer came back and hands me my license, and I mumble something about how I'll fix the headlight, and he says, "Don't worry about it. Just, you have a lot on your plate. Just go home." So in that moment, I breathe a sigh of relief, and I'm about to pull away. I turn the radio on, and Radiohead's Creep comes on. Something people ask you when a loved one dies is, do you feel their presence? And in that moment, I think I did. I turned up the volume and I rolled down my windows and I yelled Thom Yorke's lyrics into the suburban night. I felt like we were singing together. I sang to James, "You float like a feather in a beautiful world." And then he said to me, "I wish I was special." And I sang, "You're so special." And then it was like we were two teenagers driving to Lawrence again, scream singing, "But I'm a creep. I'm a weirdo. What the hell am I doing here? I don't belong here. I don't belong here." Thank you.
This episode of Midwesternish was produced by Matt Hodapp, Mike Russo, and members of the group Jen Listen KC. Sylvia Maria Gross is our editor. This episode was recorded live at Knuckleheads in Kansas City, Missouri, down by the train tracks. You can subscribe to this podcast on NPR One or wherever you generally do that kind of thing. And if you're liking Midwesternish, you should check out Central Standard, a daily show I host on Kansas City's public radio station, KCUR 89.3. Head to kcur.org to give it a listen. I'm Gina Kaufman. Catch you next time.